Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. Sports betting has been a thing pretty much since sports were invented. I would bet there's some archaeologist who's identified evidence of betting back thousands of years. Recently, though, in Canada, there have been some changes in the legal environment that have really increased the prominence of sports betting. In Ontario, for example, there are ads everywhere, ads that I never saw before. And sure, I'm sure for people who do it, it is fun. But getting into the habit of it can be problematic for some people in the same way as traditional gambling at the slot machines can be. So what are the risks as sports betting becomes more and more common? For more on this question, I'm joined by Moshe Lander. He is a senior lecturer in economics at Concordia University, specializing in the economics of sports, gaming, and gambling. He's in Montreal. That would have been a pretty fun dissertation, I bet.
I bet it would, yes.
Yeah.
It's a nice change. A lot of economists don't even know that this exists as an area.
How would you characterize the sports betting market here in Canada? Do we do it more than other geographies? How common is it?
I don't think anybody does it more than the Americans do, right? And if you have access to American TV, which pretty much everybody in Canada does, you can't avoid that it's everywhere. The Europeans like it, of course, for their soccer. And maybe for some sports that are secondary in nature to them. But here, you know, football is king. Canadians have this weird area because hockey isn't really a major betting market. And we're not really as into baseball, basketball, and football betting the way the Americans are. So we're kind of more on the cusp, but it's growing rapidly. That's for sure.
What are some of the economic principles that you apply to the world of sports betting? So if we were talking about the sale of bread, we would look at the intersection of the supply and demand curve. We're talking about the sale of a bet. People are paying to participate in that as a game. What are some of the principles that apply as you look at this world?
So there's one overriding principle that actually comes from the world of finance, and that's the idea of the efficient market hypothesis. Okay. And so this is the idea that as long as you're not doing something like insider trading, and that puts you in the Martha Stewart wing of prison, you should find that there's complete information embedded in the price of a share. So if there's some sort of public information that's out there that's not embedded in that price of a share, somebody would come along and arbitrage away that profit or loss, right? Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing then should exist within sports betting. If everybody out there has the same access to information, if you don't have secrets about who's injured, not injured, who's going to play tonight and who's not going to play tonight, then when you see something like a point spread or an over-under, that should reflect all available information. And so really what it reduces your bet to is not much more than a 50-50 coin toss as to how it's going to play out. Because if it were anything other than 50-50, you would expect that you'd see a lot of money push on one side or the other, and that would change the line and that would make it efficient. So there's this belief then that especially for very, very liquid markets where there's a lot of money gambled, you're really reducing your bet to really just a flip of a coin. And that's kind of a depressing idea if you get a lot of dopamine out of gambling.
What is the factor that having a middle person brings to this? Because if it was just me versus you, we would make a bet and we would exchange money. I would win inevitably. And you just give me your money. But when there is a middle person, they're taking margin here. And that would affect the equation in some way, surely.
Sure. So if you put in a middle person at that point, then, and I completely agree that if we gambled, you would win.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is the middle person says, how about the following? How about I take a dollar from each of you and whichever one of you wins, I'm going to give you the $2. But I want each of you to deposit 10 cents with me as a penalty fee for whichever one of you loses. The one that wins, I'll give you back the 10 cents, but the one that loses, I'm going to keep that. That's called the VIG or the vigorish. Mm-hmm. And so that's the role that, say, like Vegas would play. That's the role that here in Canada, the government is playing as the middle person. That's the role that the bookmaker on the dorm floor plays. And so they inevitably want to try and create this balanced betting that they're getting $1 from each of us, And that way they can go to bed at night knowing for sure that they're going to make their 10 cents and they don't have to worry about this imbalanced sort of betting where they're going to have to pull out of their own cash. And so if they've done the efficient market hypothesis idea really well, they're going to make a lot of money that way. And to some extent, that's why Vegas is Vegas and you and I are not.
Yeah. What do you know? What does the market know about who is doing the betting? Are there skews demographically in terms of age, gender, income?
So for sure, the overwhelming number of gamblers out there are men. And that's probably because men are more likely to be watching the sports. And that means that if they want to get involved in the action and they can't play themselves, then they're going to gamble on it. It gives them that extra boost for watching. The income distribution is probably more towards middle to lower income Canadians than it is at the high end. But if high income Canadians are participating, they're likely to be gambling a lot in dollar terms. But as a percentage of their income, it's a smaller proportion, right? So if my income is 10 times yours, but I'm only gambling two times what you are, in dollar terms, I'm gambling more, but as a percentage of my income, I'm gambling less. And so it tends to mean then that it's that meaty middle of the distribution to the lower end that's making up the volume of bets that we're seeing.
As a person whose life's work is focused on personal finance, which is really where I've spent my whole career, any sort of gambling or betting makes my my hair go on end. What are the risks from an economist, from an economic perspective, that you would flag here for individuals?
You could lose. It's as simple as that, right? Like you're basically taking
repeatedly over and over and over.
And on something for which you have zero control. So you can pour over all of the data, you can look at all of the history, you can talk to experts and whatever it is that you want to do. But at the end of the day, the moment that the game is being played, unless you're prepared to go Tanya Harding on somebody and kneecap a player to influence an outcome, you're on the sidelines here. And so that type of situation then is you should never, ever be betting on an amount that you're not prepared to lose. If you win, awesome. But you should treat it then as nothing more than, you know, you go to the movie and you're parting with your money and you just hope that the movie is good. You better be prepared to part with your money here and just hope that somehow your team covers the spread or you get the over or whatever it is that you're betting on and you get your money back. That should be seen as a bonus, not some sort of lifestyle decision of how you're going to make ends meet.
There is government, if not intervention, there's a government role in other air quotes vice categories, alcohol with tax, cigarettes with tax. What role should the government have in engaging on online sports betting in particular?
So that, I guess, depends on where your politics are, right? There's certainly going to be people out there who say you shouldn't have any limit put on there, right? Sugary drinks are unhealthy. Coffee is unhealthy, yet we don't have any restrictions that are placed on how much you can consume. And in fact, those types of things can make you a burden onto the healthcare system in later life, right? There are people from the other end who would say that, you know, the thought of legalizing marijuana was difficult enough to swallow, but the thought of legalizing cocaine and heroin is a non-starter, right? So gambling probably fits somewhere in that distribution, but it really does depend on where do you see the role of the government in creating that nanny state of telling you what you can and can't do with your money. And the other aspect is, if you lose your money, who are you hurting, right? Mm-hmm. You're a parent with lots of children, and unfortunately we can't eat this week. Yeah, maybe you need some sort of reining in. If you're living a single life and you can afford to lose that money, should you be told that you have a limit to how much you can gamble? Yeah.
One last question before we go here. What is an example of a question that researchers are trying to answer when it comes to sports betting? As we look, you know, to the next 5 or 10 years, what are people thinking about that come to this industry from an academic or a research perspective, as distinct from driving volume, because this is a website that you run to make a profit?
So I've always been fascinated by the idea of the hot hand. Is there this phenomenon that somebody can be on fire? And so that can be an athlete themselves, or it could be a bettor who just says, you know, like at the craps table, that just everything's going my way. Is that something that you can psychologically influence, or is that just random luck, right? I could flip a coin 10 times in a row, and conceivably it could land on heads. Did I will it to happen, or was that just dumb luck? That could really influence the way that people see betting then. If what you're watching is something that is controllable from either the athlete standpoint, the coach's standpoint, or the bettor themselves, as opposed to just a random opportunity here, I think that's going to influence the way that we see gambling then going forward. And I think that that might answer your earlier question of what role does the government have then, if this really is just an exercise in coin flipping.
Really interesting stuff. Moishe, thank you for joining us today.
Anytime.
Moishe Lander is a senior lecturer in economics at Concordia University. He joined us today from Montreal to talk about sports betting from an economics perspective.